Hello and welcome to this special edition of the Saxo Market Call podcast, a U.S. election countdown special edition. And I am John Hardy, head of FX strategy here at Saxo. And we'll be looking through basically a roundup of some of the articles I've been putting out in my election countdown series, but also a few final thoughts today. And I have a web post on analysis.saxo. Please find the link in the podcast notes. To an article linked to this podcast in which I discuss electoral map scenarios and just a few final thoughts, a little bit of a repeat of what I've been saying lately on election night timing, but you might find it a useful rundown there as well. So to kick off, the first piece I put out was a sort of a general overview. I can skip that one, but talking about starting from about 6 days out, the very first post I think we need to really consider here is the ones around different the one around different outcomes, my T minus 6 days piece, different outcome scenarios and how the market will react to them. You can find all these links to the various articles, by the way, in the article linked to this podcast. But in the piece, I try to emphasize where I think the probability, higher probability outcomes are, that we see at least a modest blue wave scenario. In other words, Biden taking the presidency and at least a controlling majority in the Senate for the Democrats. All they need for that is 50-50, because then they can use Harris, the vice president, as the deciding vote, and any vote counts. That's where the sort of the center of my probabilities lie. I think the market is pretty much there too. Not terrible consensus, but I lean a little bit in favor of a slightly stronger blue wave turnout than the market is expecting. And I'm open to the idea that we get this so-called blue tsunami turnout, in which we get a far stronger Democratic outcome than expected, which has quite tremendous implications for not only the political environment, but also potentially for the dollar, on prospects of a much more forceful stimulus, less sort of difficulty getting packages through the Senate, because when you have such a fine line majority, sometimes it makes one or two key senators, and remember there are independents out there, play very, very important and play very precious with their vote, whereas if you have a stronger majority, that's less likely the case. And I think on that front, and just to skip to, since we're talking electoral colleges scenarios, I've got three scenarios I put out on today's post, the T-1 post on analysis.saxo. And the first of these is the Murphy's Law situation, in which the final state that decides whether it goes to the Democrats or to the Republicans is Pennsylvania. I've emphasized here how Pennsylvania, because of its difficulties in terms of establishing some of the early voting rules and the controversy, and there's been suits and countersuits around whether votes can be counted X number of days after election day, etc. It does seem to be the perfect storm state in terms of both a potential for a fine line on the voting margin if the polls are off in a similar way to the way they were off in 2016, but also just this potential center because of that in a sort of a contested election scenario with both sides hurling accusations, whichever side nominally slightly loses, of voter suppression on the Democratic side, and on the Trump side, the ballot stuffing, illegal use of these ballots, or some sort of fraud in the mail-in and early voting totals, whatever the case, that is the Murphy's Law scenario. It means a contested election. It means a highly ugly market environment, sort of linking that back to the T-minus 6 days post on different scenarios. More than the Trump squeaks by, it's the weak Biden outcome, the train wreck, I call it, scenario two. I sort of call it Murphy's Law in terms of the electoral map, but very, very negative for risk appetite. We don't know which way is up or down for quite some time. Could go all the way to Inauguration Day in terms of declaring an outcome, and even if that outcome is declared, if it's declared by a Supreme Court, which is seen as having become extremely politicized, especially with this last-minute Republican appointment to the Supreme Court just in the days, literally the days ahead of the election, would that outcome be accepted? It would also mean, in all likelihood, that Trump lost by an even larger margin of the popular vote, with all the contingent risks of civil unrest even, and a political system that just it looks broken, if you ask me, and I think it would just be extremely ugly and uncertain how this would all shake out. Let's hope we avoid that. I don't think we want to see what that scenario looks like. Scenario two on my today's post on terms of the Electoral College would fit with what I called in the original T-6 post, sort of the Biden base case, sort of the minimal bar we need to see Biden clearing if the Democrats are to win both the presidency and controlling majority of the Senate. And it looks something like the electoral map you see there, 334 votes to Biden, 204 to Trump. And importantly, Biden wins in those key states where there are Senate races that would help get that 50-50 outcome the Dems need at minimum to control the Senate. And as emphasized in my original post here, it is so critical to know whether the Democrats have control of the Senate. It has everything to do with whether their program can be pushed through. And this scenario and all the shadings up to the blue tsunami scenario are where we see the likelihood of eventually a much weaker dollar on negative real U.S. interest rates as stimulus goes big and is based on printed money, and where a lot of that printed money ends up stimulating external economies because the U.S. runs large external deficits. And we've already seen the pattern of the post-COVID-19 outbreak stimulus, where actually personal incomes in the U.S. rose across the board because of the stimulus was so generous. That money gets spent while work is not being done. And where does that money go? A lot of it ends up abroad, as most of the consumption items in the U.S. consumption basket in many cases come from outside the U.S., China for electronic goods, and elsewhere as well. So that's the pattern. Even if there is an effort to begin reshoring of production of certain items, PPE for medical equipment, etc., that brings with it its own inflationary risks. So we see the sort of the strength of the Democratic outcome from this minimal blue wave up to the so-called blue tsunami as being dollar negative. Probably risk negative as well, at least not sort of unambiguously risk positive. I think there's going to be a lot of shadings in terms of different sectors. Where our equity strategist Peter Garnery has gone through those. But a very strong blue outcome would also bring potential anti-monopoly risks for some of the big tech companies, whereas it could reward other pockets of the market, which are seen as enjoying the fruits of stimulus from infrastructure to construction, etc., green energy, what have you. So there will be a nuanced response in the equity market. It's not simply a case of risk on, risk off. But with an exceptionally strong blue outcome, you do have the risk of concerns around a higher tax structure, peeling back some of the Trump tax reforms, and certainly some of the regulatory stuff, especially linked to environment, etc., which, all other things being equal, is just a general headwind for equities relative to what the Trump presidency proved, especially in its first 2 years when he had control of Congress. And then finally, on my scenarios in the electoral map today, there's the blue tsunami scenario, where not only does Biden get all these states that are sort of close, but he also manages to score wins in especially Georgia and Texas. This is sort of the heart of what's been Republican country for decades now. And really, this scenario would be extremely remarkable politically because it suggests a sort of a generational shift is going on here in these rather young states, which have not gone to the Democrats in decades, and would suggest a really profound defeat of what the Republican Party has become under Trump and the largest electoral college loss or win by a party since Bush Sr. won in 1988. So really just a generational type of an election outcome that brings with it what I discussed both in the original Day 6 article with a very strong mandate for the Biden program, the question being, of course, Biden is a compromise candidate and a centrist, and how far would the progressive left be able to pull him on key issues? That would be the chief question under that scenario. Okay, now one of the if this has me over to my T-minus Day 5 article, in which I discussed the importance of the youth vote as the deciding factor in this election. There are signs that there's a lot of enthusiasm among young Americans to vote. As I pointed out in this post, I think it's a couple of good graphics I have here if I want to pat myself on the back. showing an article from the census, the U.S. Census Bureau, showing the percentage turnout by different age groups over the years. And you can see that that youth turnout really moves up and down quite considerably from election to election. And when you have a time period when not much is going on, there's not been a recession or anything, that youth vote drops especially. And youth turnout is always lower than the other age categories. But anecdotal evidence and some of the early voting totals suggest that young Americans are out in large groups voting, and that those youth votes tend to lean very, very heavily to the Democratic side. So if we get, and of course the story of 2016 was that Hillary Clinton was an uninspiring candidate on the left. It was really lack of turnout on the left as much as it was heavy turnout on the right that helped to tilt the election by a hair's margin in Trump's favor. So if we get this 10, 15, or more percent increase in voting turnout, and that voting turnout increase is heavily young, which it almost has to be because this is the more volatile category in who votes, that by definition is a heavy lean in favor of Biden. And you can see also on that post, I have that demographic profile, the so-called population pyramid, where you can see that the younger generation from 20 up to 34, and especially the 25 to 29 age category in the U.S., is the very largest in the U.S., unlike much of Europe. At day four, I don't want to spend too much time with that, but just to emphasize the degree of confidence one should theoretically have based on the polls coming into this election relative to 2016, when the polls were supposedly predicting that Clinton had a very, very solid chance of winning the election. But if you look back at the profiles of the polls, I show that in the post, you can see how volatile they were in 2016. There was a really large chunk of undecided votes back then. There doesn't appear to be that level of undecided votes this time around, which by definition means, therefore, the polls are more stable. So you really have to rely on theories linked to turnouts, enthusiasm on election day, and even conspiracy theories like the so-called secret Trump vote, which from what I've looked into doesn't seem to be a very real thing to any noticeable degree. It really is a different situation for the polls this time around. And considering how barely and closely Trump won it last time, it increases my confidence in the outcome favoring the Democrats, at minimum sort of a base case Biden win, and at least a narrow take back of the Senate by the Democrats. Who are the key voting profiles that are showing up? Of course, it's the young. I've already mentioned that just now. Voting totals and the early voting totals are just absolutely staggering. Just to reiterate on that front, looking at Texas, for example, before Election Day, we have 108% of the total votes tallied in early voting in Texas, both mail-in and actually early in-person voting relative to 2016. Which actually, you could say, well, Texas is a bigger state now population-wise. It's about 8% bigger. So basically as many per capita have already turned up and voted on before Election Day than had voted through Election Day in the previous cycle. Just really remarkable. And I have to believe at the margin many of those are younger voters. Although Texas is a very low turnout state, and the devil's advocate could say, well, suddenly the talk of the state being in play could motivate the marginal Trump voter to actually get out and vote this time around in a state where people have been pretty lazy about voting, perhaps because it's always seen as leaning Republican. Other totals, Florida at 91% of the 2016 total. Georgia, there seems to be a huge get-out-the-vote campaign in Georgia, and I'm very interested to see the result there. It's at around 94%. North Carolina, and I'll mention this later when talking about what we need to follow on election night, is at 95%, etc., etc. So really heavy turnout, and again, turnout favoring in general the Democrats. But it's not just the youth. There are other signs of shifts out there, and the most notable of these, I think, in terms of sheer numbers would be white college-educated women. And I drill into a poll in my post on a very large comprehensive post, a poll from Marist polling / NBC, showing a 68-30 margin in favor of Biden relative to Trump for white educated women. compared to the 2016 outcome of 51-45. So even if there's a very, very chunky polling error in that of, let's say, 5 points, that is a staggering shift in terms of the where the vote may be headed in this election. And then in the same article, I look at one of my final points was whether the COVID-19 outbreak could play a wild card. It's resurging badly, and we're getting record case counts in recent days, and some of those are happening in the Midwest, which was such a decisive area back in 2016. It's hard to quantify. Could be a factor. A lot of the Republican vote is very dismissive of the COVID-19 factor, so I'm not so sure. And then I mentioned a couple things on betting sites, and that these aren't very good indicators for anything really, other than the proclivity of punters who are perhaps looking for larger returns, preferring to vote for Trump for the surprise option, rather than getting a small return on a bet for Biden. Okay, that takes me to the articles that I put out over the weekend, looking at a couple of things that I think are really worth considering, especially for traders and especially on election night. I remember how thrilling 2016 was on election night in terms of watching the event unfold and seeing how the market digested that move. I've got a good chart that I pulled back from 2016 on dollar yen intraday, looking at it's a 15-minute chart, if I recall, where you can see the action unfolding around 3 o'clock in the morning. It really starts picking up, 3 o'clock, that being European time, and that was more like 9 p.m. in the U.S. on the eastern seaboard, as it was becoming clear that Trump was in all likelihood scoring a very strong result and possibly a win. Everything went pear-shaped in terms of risk appetite. The dollar went down. Treasury spiked higher, and that actually later in the night, as it became increasingly clear that this was indeed the outcome, we saw that trade reversing, and throughout the next day reversing violently so because of the market making up its mind that, wait, a shock isn't bad if it means that we're going to get a president that's going to cut taxes and do all kinds of supply-side reforms that are going to goose the economy, deregulation, etc. So I think we'll see a very different pattern this time around if we're not sure what the result is. And if we do see a very clear result emerging, we could have actually sort of a mirror image type of result. In other words, a very strong blue wave could see everything moving somewhat in the opposite direction of 2016. However, I think a solid blue wave outcome is kind of expected here. So the sort of the novelty of a total shock result is not there this time around, if that's the case. If it's a massive blue tsunami scenario, I think that's a little bit of a different story, and the shock scenario, I think, would be a super close, super tight election this time around. So I've got some thoughts in that post on election night. You can look at that. There was actually, be very careful as you're watching some of these results. I actually, when covering a couple of broadcasts to sort of recap what happened that night, I looked at some of the CNN coverage recently, and they're quite good at pulling in the tallies, the sort of the live data. So you get, if you like data, they have lots of the data totals and the percentage that are reported. There was at one point when Florida was clearly starting to shift in favor of Trump later in the evening, when the second set of polls closes in Florida, it tends to be more Republican areas that are closing at the later time, at 8 o'clock p.m. Eastern Seaboard Time. But the announcer, I forget his name, continued to bang on about there were a couple of counties that still hadn't reported a very large percentage of the results, and these were clearly Democratic counties. And they had on a graphic the actual vote totals from those counties. If you had just bothered to look up the 2012 county results for those same two counties, you would have realized that the data on the percentage reporting was completely wrong, and that there were not going to be that many more Democrats possible to come out of those counties unless there was some incredible, strange, almost order of magnitude change in the voter turnout for the election. So you have to watch out what data you're seeing and what you're believing, but the one way you can cross-check in case you're confused for specific precincts reporting, etc. And then I have some links on that post to some election night resources. I think they'll be very useful. You can find your own live blogs, etc. But the CNN coverage is good for in terms of the in terms of showing the state-by-state updates and the numbers coming in. 538.com is great for live commentary and for their sort of the depth of what they're reporting. But have a look at that post. That's the T-3 post. And then my one on Sunday, I looked at, okay, what if I'm completely wrong? And if I am completely wrong, what does it mean? It's not about me. It's also about the market being wrong, about the outcome from this election. I think it's a highly useful post to just also as a trader to realize that things may not be what they seem, and to be prepared for that scenario, a highly contested election scenario. I simply can't imagine that Trump wins, but of course anything is possible if the votes are exceptionally misleading. And I provide a couple of independent voices out there who were very, very right in 2016 and are continuing to say that this election is tighter than it seems. If you haven't looked back at Michael Moore's speech just prior to the 2016 election, it is remarkable stuff. And I think it did a good job of sort of framing the election in terms of a narrative, and the narrative that got those Trump voters out to pull the trigger in the voting booth. And I think they kind of were pulling a trigger, if you will, in the voting booth. And that idea of narrative around elections, I think it's critically important, not just looking at numbers and dry polls, but the narrative around these elections and the stories that are motivating people to get out and vote. So have a look at that. And then today's piece, in which I run down some last thoughts on the election night timing, with the huge early voting totals coming out of Florida and North Carolina. They are allowed to tally those votes early in the process, so starting as much as 2 weeks ago in Florida's case, also North Carolina. This will mean that they dump a huge amount of the results right at the poll closing times, and Florida in particular is the state to watch. Last time around, they were at 90%+ by 8:30 in the evening on the eastern seaboard in the U.S. That is around 2:30 in the morning European time. It took a long time to get to 100% from there, but you started seeing a clear tilt around that 90% area, or before that 90% area, and it was pretty clear that Trump was starting to take the election by then. It will be trickier. There is a heavier lean on the initial results that come in than last time around, but the maths start to get pretty apparent as you see the move from, let's say, 80% to 85%, then 85 to 90%, and then 90 to 92, which way those later tallied votes are heading. And you can do the math on whether there's simply enough votes out there to tilt the election at that point. So if it's very clear, for example, even as early as then, let's say even towards 3 in the morning European time, 9 o'clock U.S. Eastern Seaboard time, that Florida is going very strongly to Biden and by a bigger margin likely than was expected, I would almost say you can expect a blue wave outcome in the election. Don't quote me on that, but it just the math would start to add up really against Trump, and very strongly so at that point in the night. And then a similar thing for North Carolina, where you have a little bit slower counting going on. They close a half hour later, if I'm not mistaken, and I've got links to all the closing times. And we're also last time you saw a sort of a tick-by-tick move in terms of Trump towards Trump, which will happen again. But as, again, the higher percentage levels are reached in the total counting, North Carolina can be used as a comparison to whatever's happening in Florida. And if you're getting a sense that it's corroborating what's going on in Florida, that the Republican vote is just not stacking up as quickly as it needs to as the night goes on, those two states will give you a very good picture. And it would mean if the tilt is strong enough there, that we don't have to wait for the real laggards. And really, I think it's just terrible how long it takes. States like Ohio, Wisconsin, Pennsylvania, Michigan, those last three being the three key decider states in the election last time around, who take forever to count their votes. And in particular, again, Pennsylvania being one that needs to avoid a train wreck in terms of the legal process and some contested election scenario. Okay, I think with that, I've been talking probably far too long, but I hope you found this useful. Run through the posts if you'd like to get a hold of those links to the different stories and the different resources you can use as we head into election night tomorrow evening. I imagine many of you are just as excited as I am to see how this shakes out. I have a fairly strong lean in terms of my perceived probability of what's going to happen here, but I've also got this, as I noted in my piece on Sunday, on what if I got this completely wrong? I maintain a healthy degree of concern, if you will, that that the polls might be wrong, that I'm getting something wrong here, that there's something in the narrative that may not add up, and we'll know the truth either way on election night, and whether we can even call the election on election night tomorrow night. So for now, thanks very much for joining, and we'll be back tomorrow with our usual daily market call on election day.